Jesus is the only way to have peace with God. Though there is only one way to God, everyone's journey to Jesus is unique and magnificent. Here is a story of one's journey to Christ, now on Redemption Report. Welcome to this week's edition of Redemption Report. Today I have a friend that I met at church, and we've been able to interact about several things over the last couple of years. So we've determined that we have a love for martial arts, and just in speaking with him just a moment ago, learned that he may even have a connection to some of my favorite sports teams as well. So Gary Smith, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Great, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you're from this area, I'm guessing, or are you? No, you're
not trans. At all.
I don't know a lot about your story, so I'm excited to learn today.
No, you're fine.
where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Primarily, in fact, I'll give you this. Actually, does connect to a lot of my identity in Christ and why I was really drawn to Christ in my latter years. But I had born to two wonderful parents. My mom and dad were really awesome, loving people. I have a younger brother. He's a great guy. I love my brother a lot. And so lived in Boston, Massachusetts area till age 8. And then my dad got transferred to Indianapolis, Indiana University Medical Center, and lived there for 3 years. So the magic number here is 3. So from ages 8 to 11, lived in Indianapolis. Then he got transferred again and went to Connecticut. So we started heading back to the East Coast, lived there for 3 years until age 14. And that's actually when my parents got divorced. My dad stayed in Connecticut, and my mom, we moved in with my grandmother. At age 14, moved right, pretty much full circle, right back to Boston, Dorchester, Massachusetts, where the famous Wahlberg family is from. So yeah. Donnie Wahlberg from New Kids on the Block, Mark Wahlberg, et cetera. So they're, in fact, I live 2 blocks from where they grew up. I used to say that's the closest to famous I'll ever get.
But did you know them growing up? Did you interact with them at all?
You know, I knew who the oldest brother was. They wouldn't know me. And I had met some of them, but no, short answer, not really. But my brother did. My brother actually did. He was younger than me, so he interacted with some of them. But in any event, we moved right back to Dorchester, right back full circle, and lived there all through my latter junior high years, high school years, and college years until, you know, later on, you know, became an adult. But in any event, and then eventually moved out to the Midwest here with my job.
Okay.
So that's what brought me out here in like 95. I call that the year I became an American. You know,
you weren't an American living in Boston?
I was. And I love Boston very much, but it was really kind of nice out here too, because it was very red, white, and blue.
Okay.
Economically, it was cheaper, all this stuff. Great place to raise a family. And it reminded me of when I used to live in Indianapolis as a kid, when I was just sharing that with you, is just remember that kind of that Midwest feel. It was just very homey to me. And so I liked that. So, but anyways, that was my journey. But I was the new kid on the block several times, as you'll hear later, growing up in all those different places.
Yeah, that's a lot of moving. The interesting, like you said, though, I'd be able to identify elements of your story by 3, like 3 years here, 3 years there, and all that travel, I'm sure. Like, to your point, Indianapolis is about 2 hours from where we're recording this episode right now, and that is very different from even where we're at, but not near as different as, like, the New England area to come out and make that transition. So, Gary, if you were to just kind of describe who you are, or kind of like what you do, I know as of the date of recording this, you're kind of in between jobs right now, but like how would you describe yourself, or if there's somebody that is just meeting you for the first time, what would you tell them about yourself?
Oh, interesting question. Well, obviously I want to be as humble as I can.
Oh, yeah.
Sincerely, but no, I would say energetic, loving, faithful and devoted. Like I said, we were praying earlier, but I'm very grateful for my wife, my kids, grandkids. Family is very important to me. So that was one thing I'd say. Both my parents are deceased now. So are my wife's, but we both came from really, on the whole, pretty loving families with a lot of love and support. So very family.
You said your parents are deceased?
Yeah, they are now.
Okay. But, and then you said your wives?
Yeah, and hers are too. So
your wives, okay.
Yeah, both of ours. So on that conveyor.
Maybe you had multiple wives that had died. So I was just clarifying. No, I was like, I know you're married now. But okay.
No. But on that conveyor belt of life, you know, when you're a kid, there are a lot of more people on that conveyor belt at the end.
Sure.
As you get older, there aren't that many people in front of you now.
That makes some more sense. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We're on that conveyor belt where, oh, we're the ones who are next. But in any event, I would say, but in terms of, you know, things that I enjoy, pastimes and hobbies, very much into physical fitness. Growing up as a kid, my brother and I played every sport imaginable. I played baseball for 8 years. We played basketball. I was on hockey teams, soccer, even tennis and volleyball, stuff like that. It was into, as you mentioned earlier on the, we were talking earlier, I was into boxing. I was on the boxing team in college for 3 years, and I did martial arts practitioner for like 20, 25 years. I really love it, more from the street self-protection standpoint, mm-hmm. but I just have a passion for that kind of stuff.
What styles did you train in or study?
Yeah, there were a few. So I started, I did boxing in college, and the only reason I joined the boxing team is because I tried out for baseball and didn't make it. And okay. I thought for sure I'd make it because, like I said, I played for 8 years. Why not? What happened was I got to college and the kids all of a sudden got really big. And the fastballs were coming in at 90, 95, 100 miles per hour instead of 80. So, and that was my problem when I was trying out. I couldn't hit anything. So so there went baseball. But I joined the boxing team and it ended up being a real cool thing. But to answer your question, I eventually got involved in Kenpo karate. Kenpo stands for Chinese boxing. And eventually after that, I got in a style called Chinese Wing Chun Kung Fu. And I had a private instructor, and that was really cool. A guy who was in our college, who was from Brooklyn, New York. He was an exchange student. He took me and a few other people on. That was really cool. And I've dabbled in a few other styles since then, too, mm-hmm. just because I started to really get interested in it, kind of like you did. Even a little bit of Taekwondo, which I know you did.
Yeah.
You know, Penchak Silat is another favorite of mine. Styles called Kali, a lot of the Filipino martial arts and things like that, that I think are really effective for street. That was really what I was interested in. Because growing up as a kid, I was skinny and nerdy. Don't look so surprised. No, I'm joking.
You were fighting all those Wahlbergs, I guess, yeah, growing right. up.
yeah, but you know, and it wasn't until later in life I started at least, you know, working out, putting some meat on my bones and started learning these things where I finally felt like I could at least protect myself. It was one of those things where, you know, growing up in the suburbs, I don't know that that is maybe such a big deal, but at least growing up in the city of Boston, that was a sign of strength. Mm. And the more you could work out in those types of things and show you could protect yourself, you actually, believe it or not, warded off a lot of that danger. Like most kids at that point would say, well, let's not mess with this guy because, you know, I see him working out over here. Whereas before, I was getting picked on all the time.
Interesting.
You know, so, and I had the brown horn rim glasses and all kinds of things. So trust me, I looked pretty nerdy. I was kind of a smart kid when I was growing up, kind of a brainiac. And I used to actually read the encyclopedia. And even brought on the train.
That's essentially like reading Wikipedia nowadays.
Yeah,
so
kind of, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, answer your question. But those are the start. But I started just really getting involved in martial arts and just really interested in the different styles. But I'd say other than that, music, same thing. I play guitar and drums. And of course, my wife can sing amazingly. And our kids are pretty gifted at this too. A lot of them are. So I would say music is a big part too.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I would just say I enjoy computers and technology and those kinds of things because I do that in my job. So that's always fun too.
Cool.
And
well, going back to the martial arts thing, like you mentioned, you know, I did martial arts for 19 years and I think it's definitely struck a chord with me in how you described it. It's like once you get into it, it becomes a lifestyle. Like you learn so much and you can continue to study, and there's people that do it their entire lives and continue to learn more and more. And so even learning those other styles really help keep your mind growing, but also it's a good form of discipline for your body.
Absolutely.
And it's just, like I said before, a lifestyle. And I think there's a lot of spiritual implications. You know, sometimes it can be taken too far where some martial arts are more religiously tied than others. But mm-hmm. for me, there was no worship of other deities or anything involved in it. But what it did for me is help me learn more about how God created me and even how I discipline my body or control my body to honor and serve God in a variety of different ways. So yeah, mm-hmm. it's definitely something that's very positive to know how to defend yourself and then the other benefits that come with it, with the health and fitness.
No, absolutely, Tim. I appreciate what you said about the spiritual side too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously I wasn't Bruce Lee, nor did I want to be. But you're right about that in the sense that it teaches you restraint. Because once, and it teaches you confidence. If I were a parent out there, I think I would definitely consider it because it teaches you goal setting. It teaches mm-hmm. you discipline. I know some schools out there are very kid oriented, teach, you know, make sure you make your bed and you're obeying your parents and you're doing your chores and, you know, like they get into that, but you do, you know, it teaches you restraint, like you said, discipline and mm-hmm. goal setting. So it's good from that standpoint.
Yeah. Too. So going back to your upbringing and childhood, when I know you moved around a lot, but when was the first time that you ever heard the name of Jesus yeah. or had a connection where you not necessarily believe, but just when you first heard about Jesus?
You bet. So we grew up in a Catholic household.
Okay.
And nothing wrong with that. But there wasn't anyone in my family that had a relationship with Christ. So we go to church as a family and eventually, and even that was hit or miss. So, but I definitely heard about God, from my mom. My dad was an atheist, by the way. He was proclaimed.
So you were
Catholic atheist.
Through your mom's influence, but
you
not
got
through
it.
Dad. Okay.
Yeah. And, but we weren't, solid in going to church, but there was a somewhat reverence and fear of God and that kind of thing, but no relationship.
Okay.
But my mom was eager on at least, you know, that we prayed sometimes, at least tried to go to church. It was all about trying to be good. So like I said, I'm not knocking any particular denomination or this or that, but at least for us and our household, no one had a relationship with it. But at least I had a concept of God,
mm-hmm.
Of, you know, starting at that point. But to carry it further, so a few things went on throughout the years. When I was a senior in high school, my best friend, one of my best friends had become a Christian. And I always remembered, I was always one of these guys, Tim, where I may not believe or agree with what you believe, but I'll defend your right to believe it kind of thing. So if you want to believe it, I'll still be friends with you. So I always found a way to agree to disagree somehow.
Okay.
I guess my parents instilled that in me somehow. But he became a Christian, and he eventually had to distance himself from us because I will tell you this, and I won't get into too much detail, but as my teenage years went on, I was really striving to figure out what makes a man.
Hmm.
And I started, you know, like a lot of other teenagers, you know, like I said, I moved around a lot. So for me, this idea of being accepted was so important to me. Social image. Will these kids like me? Because I lived in Indianapolis. I finally had some friends. I had to leave them. Then we moved to Connecticut. Finally started building some friends. Starting to kind of feel like I'm cool. Had to leave them.
Mm.
And when I went back to Boston, Tim, I said, okay, the first group of kids that comes along, first group, I don't care who they are, I'm going to do everything I can to fit in with these guys. And by the way, and I don't blame them. I had some good friends, but they're into some big things. So we used to do vandalism. And I'm not proud of any of these things. I'm not boasting in them,
sure,
but I'm just letting you know, growing up in the city, this is where I eventually gravitated to. We were throwing rocks and eggs at cars. We were shoplifting for fun. We were getting into fights half the time, eventually got into drinking, even drugs, smoking pot, that kind of thing. I've even been in a stolen car. And like I said, I'm not proud of any of those things. But that's where my teenage life, that's where my teenage years were going. And like I said, my parents got divorced at age 14. So I was this latchkey child.
Yeah.
Didn't have a whole lot of supervision. I was always out and about. Had to babysit my brother, but that's fine. I could always do these other things. So I started getting involved in those things. But to me, it was all about social image. What can I do to prove I'm cool
mm-hmm.
so that others will accept me? And hold on to that thought, because as you get into my salvation mm-hmm. story, that's where it begins to resonate.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like as you're growing up and trying to figure out life kind of on your own, being that you're being raised with your mother and your grandmother at that point, you don't really have a strong, you know, basis of relationship with God, you know, just kind of more religious or out of duty, have an idea of there is a God, but not really anything personal. It sounds like it would be, you know, Gary's in charge of his own destiny. He has to figure life out on his own. Do you remember during those years of development and, you know, like you said, rebelliousness, was there any thought of God, or was there any fear of consequence or anything that more than just at a superficial earthly level, but anything with God in the picture?
Some yes and some no, but I'll tell you some funny things. I made up my own rules. So even though I grew up in, like I said, a Catholic household, we used to say the Lord's Prayer and the Rosary all the time. I can remember before I went out to party and get into whatever trouble we'd get in, I used to say the Lord's Prayer like 10 times. And then I would say, you know, tonight might be a really kind of dangerous night. I'm going to say it 5 more times. So I would pray this prayer. I'm not saying that's great. And I look back now, it's absolutely silly and crazy. But I would...
No, but we make up
I was thinking that would
mind,
protect
yeah.
me. Yeah. So, but like I said, there was at least this, as silly as that sounds, and we can laugh. I laugh at it now, but I at least had some concept of God. But it was all about what he could do for me. Mm-hmm. And there was certainly no godliness to, you know, well, I need to die to myself. Like true Christianity, where you die to yourself. Right? Where before you know Christ, you live for yourself. When you come to know Christ, you live for him. That's how it should be. Mm-hmm. And so, but in any event, I'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, so when were you first presented with the gospel?
Yeah, sure. So there's a series of things. So this is perfect. It's a nice segue the way you build it. So like I said, I had a friend, Danny, who became a Christian senior in high school. And he took me to church. Out of all the kids he asked to go, he said I was like the only one who would go. I don't know why, but I said, yeah, I'll go with you. And it was a charismatic church, by the way, and they were speaking in tongues. So you can imagine, I don't even know the gospel yet. I don't, you know, so and I'm watching all this. But these were sincere Christian people.
Yeah.
And I remember one of the last times he went out with us as a group of guys, there were 4 of us in this car, and we had a case of beer in the car. And before we went out, Dan said, Gary, will you pray? And then I remember my friend who was sitting up front, had another front and back, and they're like, pray for what? And Dan just said, will we at least pray? And he always, because later on when I told him I came to Christ, some years later, he said he always remembered that. Now, by the way, I wasn't a Christian yet, but I at least prayed. So for some reason, I at least didn't have this, you know, too much fear of associating myself with God. I clearly wasn't living the life, and I clearly wasn't a Christian by any means. Mm-hmm. I hadn't repented, or none of that. And then I didn't have biblical faith, for sure. But I at least was open to it. So then what happens is a series of things went on. I started to take, and I'll show you how all this fits.
Yeah.
But again, my idea of a man, I was very interested in this idea of what makes a man, you know, what makes him strong. Because I remember I'm going to be 18 soon, graduating from high school. I'm going to be 22, graduating from college. What does that look like? So I thought a man was what the world was describing to me. How good can you drink? Can you cuss like a sailor? I mean, you got to be cool. You can't be cool if you can't cuss. Can you work out with the best of us? Do you play any sports? I mean, come on. Are you that nerdy that you, I mean, can you pick up a baseball bat or a hockey stick? You got to be able to show some strength, you know? And so I thought all of those things were really what made a man.
And was your dad involved in your life at all? I know you had moved away from him, but
he was.
Okay.
And then that's, parents were so loving, even though they were divorced. And my dad later remarried, and him and his second wife were married over 40 years. Mm. And she was a huge part of his life, and she eventually became part of our life, you know. And so I saw my dad in that. But my dad was very disciplined, self-made man. He didn't have parents.
Okay.
He was raised by his grandparents. But odd, strangely, he never got involved with alcohol or anything. He was even in the military. My dad was super disciplined, and he tried to share that with us. So he was a great dad. He wasn't there all the time because he lived in Connecticut, but he came when he could. And eventually I got to see him, you know, my brother and I got to see him like once every 2 weeks.
Okay.
And he was super involved.
But
he
that messaging of manhood probably is not complete or distorted in some way. Like you said,
right.
You're forming your own ideas of what a man is.
Right.
And if dad's not involved a lot or
yeah.
for some people at all, it definitely would get distorted just to kind of understand where you're coming from a little better.
Yeah. No, right on, Tim. And he clearly was a good positive influence in that. Again, mm-hmm. not a biblical okay. influence, but at least from a hard work ethic perspective, and even just good advice perspective, my dad was super that way. And so was my mom.
Okay.
I have no excuse for the trouble I get into and the mischief I used to get into as a kid. There's nothing that forced me into that. I chose that. Mm-hmm. You know, I chose to get into some of these issues and even experiment with, you know, smoking pot and things like that and drinking. But what I was really into, though, is like I said earlier, because I got picked on some, I was tired of it. Like I finally, I started hitting the gym. I was lifting weights. I was boxing. I was doing this. And amazingly, my junior year in high school, don't know how it happened, but just human willpower, I made a decision to stop smoking.
Okay.
I joined the track team as a bridge to just physical fitness for the next sport. A lot of kids did that. A lot of kids ran track just to shape up for whatever sport they were going to next. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to college, like I said, I joined the boxing team. And I even started, I was still very much involved in the party scene, but I started drinking less. I was drinking less because I basically said, I really want to improve my body and my mind. And so somehow on my own, I at least came up with some level of willpower. I like to think God was influencing that through whatever he instilled in me, prior. But I was starting to get more interested in those kinds of things. So slowly but surely, I was at least, shaping up. But still, again, my definition of a man was that stuff. Like, mm-hmm. You got to be strong, and you still got to be able to cuss like a sailor, because that's cool. But I was finally at a point where I felt in my junior, senior year of college, and this is where it all culminates. So here it comes, right? And here come the people. I felt like I had finally arrived. And I don't know, how do I say this? I could party, but not overdo it. I was working out 5 days a week. I was on the boxing team. I was scoring dates. I was able to get accepted by these kids. I felt like finally, from a social image perspective, I'm almost there. And that's when God came in. And I remember, and I'll try and summarize this as best I can, because there are a lot of different people, a lot of different things. Yeah, but I remember in dating relationships I had, people encouraged me to walk with God. I met the captain of the track team at my college. His name is Freddie, and I didn't know he was a Christian. He was the director of Campus Crusade for Christ. Okay. And at that time at college, we had three organizations, InterVarsity, Navigators, and Campus Crusade for Christ, started by Bill Bright, a really great evangelist. So that was really big at that time. I think they call it Crew today, but they were encouraging me. And then senior year, I finally get out of the dorms where you're crammed in with a roommate. And I had some great roommates, a lot of good friends. I had some good buddies. But when you're senior, you get to live in the senior apartments, six people to a place. It's like a 4-bedroom place. It's like, wow, get all the space, your own kitchen. And I moved in with these guys who were, I'll just say from my standpoint, they were a step up above me. They were super into their studies. They played football, had a track star, a couple of track guys. And they really accepted me. And so I was senior year, like I said, I just felt like, man, I've arrived.
Yeah.
Like I'm with some really cool roommates. This is my last year. I'm going to make it. And the cool thing is we all worked out. We all drove to the gym 5 days a week. And then, you know, we did intramurals and everything. Like I was really enjoying this. And all of a sudden, and this is for people who are older who may see this, they may remember this, but used to watch NBC Game of the Week baseball on Saturdays all the time. Yeah. I forget what they called it exactly this time, but there used to be this guy who wore an afro with red, yellow, rainbow-colored hair. He'd hold up a sign that said John 3:3. For years, this guy did it. Don't know if he's still alive. I bet there's a special place in heaven for him. The Gideons used to come around with the Bibles. They handed a Bible, and I was reading it one night in my senior apartment. I read John 3:3. And it says, unless a man be born again, he cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. Rocked me. I thought born again was this weird word that weird Christians use. Remember, my view of being a man was strength, no sign of weakness. And Christians, to me, nice people. I'd met a lot of them, but a lot of them, to me, were just nerdy and, do you know Jesus? And that kind of thing. And like, hey, can you kind of step it up? I always thought they were just kind of just... Because
not your kind of people.
Well, yeah. And listen, and I'm one of them now, but my point is that's who everybody told me they were. Mm-hmm. They're kind of strange people, but they're nice people. And so my roommate Kevin, by the way, he was black. I had two of my roommates were black. The other three were white and I was white. But I say that because we didn't let any racial difference get in the way of it. And my friend Kevin and I were super good friends. And in fact, we could joke with each other like beyond belief, like even about our different backgrounds, and still hug each other. And it was a great friendship. I loved Kevin, and he saw me reading it. And I said, Kevin, did you know that? Did you know you have to be born again? He goes, yeah, you have to be. I'm like, how did you know? He goes, I'm a Christian. He said, I got work to do. And we all did. But he was a Christian, and his mom was a deaconess in their church. They were part of a charismatic church too. He told his mom, and his mom became a very good friend of mine. So I have, you know, a girl I'm dating. I have a captain of the track team. I've got my roommate. Now I've got my roommate's mom. And I remember this stirs up that emotion, because I remember something's going on in my life, and it's bigger than my life. And I don't know what it is, but I knew it was God, but I didn't know what he was doing. So long story short, now I'm trying to keep this, because there's so many people, Tim.
Yeah.
Because when you start to hear and connect the dots, you'll start to see yourself like, oh my gosh, God, it's almost like God sent an elite force of special force Green Beret angels to just surround me and said, we're taking over. Right. So anyway, long story short, I finally made a decision to go to Campus Crusade for Christ. It was sometime first semester, October, November maybe. And I show up, and it was testimony night, something like that. And there might've been a dozen people in the room. And I'm not kidding you. When I showed up at Campus Crusade for Christ, there were a lot of people there that knew me, but they said, oh, if you're looking for the party planning, because Thursday night was big campus night, drink night, keg night.
Okay.
I remember the weekend start on Thursday in college,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
And so my reputation preceded me. They were nice and everything. They said, oh, you're in the wrong room. Gary, you want the, and I'm like, no, I'm actually here to see you. And they were delighted, and they welcomed me. And then I saw Freddie, you know, and he was there. And so it was testimony night. And I remember there was this girl that stood up, and she gave her testimony, and it so resonated with me. She said that she lived her entire life just trying to be accepted by her friends, and said that she did everything she could just to be accepted. That's where she found her value. And she talked about how her friends were not always there for her. And bottom line, when she gave this part, she said, but God accepts me right for who I am.
Yeah.
And Tim, when I heard that, I remember thinking, my entire life is a lie. And I haven't given my testimony in a while, but you know, when I used to give it, I'd be able to just roll through it and big smile and all that. But like I said, it's been a while. But it's good, because it helps remind me. And I used to pray that. I used to say to God, God, don't ever let me forget. You know what that was like. So anyway, but I remember when she said that, it was like my entire life, everything I've built. And by the way, I was scared of it, because I'm like, no, wait a minute, God, I work hard for this, right? I drank a lot of beer for this. I lifted a lot of weights for this. I did this. And I mean, like, come on, like you can't shed at all, can you? And I remember hearing that, man, that stuck with me, bothered me a little bit, because I realized that's me. And it was almost like God was speaking to me. You know how sometimes you can hear a sermon, Tim, and you feel like, my gosh, he's speaking to me.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. And I'll get quickly to this part. So back in those days, if you wanted to go home for the weekend in Boston, where I went to school was in the western part of Massachusetts. That's 2.5 hours to home in Boston. So west side for school, east coast near the ocean for home. But we always hitchhike. Hitchhiking was a thing back then. In a college town, you stick your thumb out, a student's going to pick you up and say, where are you going? Oh, I can get you close enough, you know. So that's how it was. And I remember this guy, they used to call him Big Scotty. There was a kid that picked me up. His name is Scotty. He was so big, they called him Big Scotty. And we knew each other a little bit because we'd work out in the weight room, and it was the type of thing where I'd be under and I'd be bench pressing, and then it's his turn. He'd be like, yeah, I want you to throw like three plates. Okay. You know, so he was a huge guy. He played football. In fact, he was so big, his legs were so long that when I was in the car talking with him, I'd have to turn my head and go, so how are classes going? Like, he's in the back seat because he had to push the seat back, practically in the back seat. That's how long his legs were. I remember talking to him. You doing okay? Yeah. School going good? And we're talking, and somehow we get on the topic of Christ. And he wasn't a Christian yet either, but he was talking about how he's really, like, thinking a lot about Jesus. And people have been talking to him. And I said, Scott, same thing here. I said, I got people coming in all every angle of my life telling me about Christ. And so we'd start, and like, what is it about? And so we started talking about the things of Christ that were really drawing us, and we were just really getting into it, like Jesus is it. Like, we were like almost there. So there was Bring Your Friend Night a week or so later. And so long story short is I asked him, I said, listen, how would you like to come? He goes, yeah, I've always thought about it. I said, well, it's Bring a Friend Night. I said, well, you're my friend. You want to come? He goes, yeah, sure. So he shows up. And long story short is he gave his life to Christ that night. Wow. And the funny thing is I remember people coming up to me saying, Gary, that's awesome. I'm like, I'm not even saved. Like, you know, yeah. Like I didn't, but you know, but I think there were people, cause there were other people there that night. And for some reason people coming up to me like, wow, it's so good. You brought him. So good to have you here. And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. But the crazy
thing
is
better missionary than a lot of the people that were there. Yeah.
Well, I think it's Luke 16, right? And the bosom of Lazarus. Like there are signs, there are stories in scripture where God uses an unbeliever to go Correct. Tell others. So yep. God can do anything. Right. Mm-hmm. But the crazy thing, Tim, is, if I wasn't going to Campus Crusade for Christ at my college in Western Massachusetts, when I go home on weekends, I was going to like MIT Campus Crusade for Christ, you know, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. I was going to theirs. So I was getting hit from everywhere. And I had people telling me they're praying for me everywhere. So like I said, people started coming in from every angle. And, you know, before the podcast, you said the Dallas Cowboys are one of your favorite teams.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one of the nice things about this is I was introduced to a book called Power for Living, and it's a book of famous sports stars who are Christians. Dr. Julius Erving, Dr. J, one of the greatest basketball players of all time. He's one of the first stories in the book, and I remember reading, I'm like, he's a Christian? And I flipped the page, and Roger Staubach is in there, the famous quarterback from the Cowboys. And the Bible verse he puts in there is in Romans 3. And a verse from Romans 3 is one of his favorite life verses. Then you turn the page again. Tom Landry, the coach from the Cowboys at that time, you know, was in there. And I started thinking to myself, Christians aren't nerds. I mean, there are people in life groups all over the place that are look this way, look that way. It doesn't make any worse for a person. And I started to remember thinking, wow, God really does go after everybody.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is God was using whatever he could to draw me. He was using people remember, my source of strength or what I viewed was people who could show strength and not show weakness. God knew that. So he introduced people in my life who were sources of strength that I would look up to, but more importantly, see him through mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. The track coach, Freddie, these people in this book, Powerful Living, you name it. And there were other people too. Finally, a long story short, second semester, I was finally asked the question, Gary, do you want to receive Christ? Mm. And all I can tell you is in a dormitory room in Boston, for the first time ever, I prayed to receive Christ. I do believe it's a very authentic way to do it. And I prayed my very first real prayer. I told God that I'm a sinner. I asked him to forgive me. I told him I believed in him. I told him I'm sorry for my sins. I told him I want to come home. And he forgave me. He truly forgave me. And man, and it's like a veil is lifted. You know, it's almost like you can see now.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if, and I could feel that liberation, and I could sense, and I even remember praying to God and said, God, I don't know anything about you, but I want to learn. And where I am today, it's a far cry. And, you know, and the famous quote I like to use is, because I think it describes me too, is I may not be all I'm supposed to be in Christ. I may not even be all I want to be, but thank God I'm not who I used to be.
Yeah.
And he changed all that. I mean, he really changed mm-hmm. it, truly changed it. And I had to make decisions to give up certain friendships. I remember telling friends, I can still be friends with you, but we can't do the same things. I remember giving up all that. But it was hard because I remember when I was contemplating this, I contemplating it for like a couple months. I'm like, do I really want to give up everything I've worked for? I mean, people finally, for the first time in my life, there are groups of people I've always envied who think I'm cool. And I worked hard for that image. But when I finally got to see that's all it was just an image. And that I didn't, and that was a relief too, Tim. I didn't have to fight anymore for people's approval. Right? God accepts me exactly who I am. And like Billy Graham used to say, some people think they got to clean up their life and then come to God. No, it's the other way around. Come to God as you are. He'll clean you. He'll do all that work.
Right.
He'll do the cleanup. And so, but in any event, that's how it happened. And and then, of course, the key from there, and I was blessed to be part of a super church. It was in Lexington, Massachusetts, called Grace Chapel. Super church, really godly Christians who were just super, super people. And I got involved in prison ministry for 4 years. I ended up getting into urban in inner city homeless shelter ministry for about 7 years after that, partly there, some here in Kentucky. And I went from not knowing the Bible at all. I mean, when I say I didn't know the Bible, you could say, Gary, can you at least get me to the New Testament? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be able to tell you. I really wouldn't be able to tell you. I knew nothing about the Bible. You know, and even my wife and I had a chance to serve, and you know, we taught Sunday school together and end up in a teaching capacity for like 20, 25 years, even preaching, you know, in inner city Covington and the shelters there and stuff. And so I only say that God gets all the credit, not me. It's not my work, but it's a far cry from where I was. And I say that because if you were to say to someone, hey, do you remember Gary Smith? What do you think he's doing now? Oh, he's probably drinking somewhere, or I don't know, he's probably... And if you were to tell them, no, he's actually a Christian now, I don't think they believe you.
Yeah.
That's how the contrast, you know, darkness versus light, that was my life. I call that my BCAD, you know, that was my life before Christ, AD after divine intervention. So it's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously it's like the stock market. It's like a trend. It goes up and it goes down. Sure. But I like to think trend-wise, right, I continue to walk with God. And continue to trust him.
Yeah. So, I like how you, in your story, you pointed to so many of these details that could easily be overlooked or just kind of like, well, that's just happenstance. But just, I think it's beautiful when God reveals that each of those instances in our life are ways that he's reaching out to us. And it may not be clearly obvious at the time. In fact, often it's not obvious at all, but you know, just different elements of your story of how God was setting the table for what would come in the future, or different things that you're able to identify, like, oh, God was there. I didn't know God yet, but he was pursuing me. Yeah, and even though it wasn't the day of salvation, like the day where I was ready and his spirit was working to bring me to that point of salvation, he was still intentional about loving you. And I think, like you mentioned earlier, you know, it's sometimes easy, like if you're just telling your story all the time, to kind of lose the emotion behind it. But I think it's so beautiful to see in you, you know, not to embarrass or belittle you or anything, but just how beautiful it is to see you tear up and relive it, and just like shows how precious your Savior is to you and how much of a good work he's done in you. And if not for Christ, like, so would I be. Like, I could be in a far different place. And that's my experience too, where if God wasn't involved in my life, if he didn't intentionally seek me out and save me from myself and my sin, my life would look totally different. And I may not even be here. I've no doubt I may not even be alive for a variety of reasons if not for Christ. Yeah. And so
thank you.
I appreciate you sharing all that and highlighting all those little details.
Yeah. Thank you, Tim. I appreciate you saying that. It's humbling too. And I say this just in somewhat in jest, but it goes to show you how stubborn and stupid I was. Now, say with me now, what I mean by that is when I look back at those things, I appreciate you, you know, capturing those two and noticing those, because I almost look down, like I almost went of God looking down, like one's not going to do it, two's not going to do it. I'm going to need an army of people to surround this guy because he's as stubborn as they come. And I do feel that way sometimes because I feel like they were just building blocks, but all these different people were really cool, godly influences, you know, at that time, or at least things people said. And there were others too that I didn't mention that I could just feel something bigger going on in my life. So it's humbling because I think I was probably one of the more stubborn ones, probably. So we'll see. I get a chance to
that's
ask
a good view,
someday.
Like to be very real about your sin. Like too often people, I think of themselves as good people or that they're not that bad. But when you come to that point of realizing like, I am a sinner, even as Paul writes, I'm the chief of sinners. Now, had Paul committed more sin quantifiably than anyone else? Well, we'll never know. No, there's no sin collection bucket that's heavier than another that we can weigh. But to have that approach of saying, you know, I'm the worst. I mean, that's how I see myself is like, yeah, Gary, you might have your problem, but you have no idea what I'm. And I think that's why it's so beautiful that God saves us no matter where we're at, no matter what we've done, no matter how far we think we've gone, he's still there and he loves us so much to bring him to himself. Now, with your story, it sounded like you accepted Christ while you were in college. Is that correct?
Yeah, so age 22.
And it sounds like following your conversion, your life started to change pretty radically. Like,
big time.
You know, you weren't the same. What would you say is has been over the last, 30 plus years of knowing Christ, what has been one of the most challenging aspects of following Christ? Because it's obviously not always easy, but what would you say for someone who's considering Christ or just new to salvation, what would you say has been one of the most challenging aspects of having a life or relationship with Christ?
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think the first thing I would say is don't worry about what the world thinks. There's a song by the group Petra. There's a phrase in this song called Fool's Gold. I also love this song, and it says, some may call me foolish, some may call me odd, but I'd rather be a fool in the eyes of man than a fool in the eyes of God. So I would say worry about more what God thinks, and the rest will fall in place. So that was one. I think...
Has that been true in your life, like a specific example you remember of where it's been... challenging
for
you?
I could think a lot of them. Okay. I really can. And I can...
We don't have to tell me about all.
No, I know. We don't have time. But God's been faithful.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest challenge has always been the workplace. Because I always heard you're a missionary in your workplace. And so just a quick story. And by the way, I've learned a lot, by the way, from watching my wife, Vicky, who is... You talk about someone who's not ashamed of her faith. Vicky is she's not afraid to get out there with anybody, but she does it in such a way that's really loving, I find, in my humble opinion, that a lot of people say she really comes across very tender. And so she's got a real knack for doing that. But at the same time, she's not afraid to speak up. So she's got that balance. I've even watched it in some of our kids. So I'm really encouraged and heartened to see how even some of our kids like have no problem standing up for Christ on their social media, whatever. So it's cool. But just a really quick story. So again, I'm new in Christ at this time. I started working for this company that I was just with for 38 years. And I was part of a really evangelical church. So I was on fire. I was on fire for Christ. And it's a little different from here in the Midwest. In New England, you have this sense of total, like, oh, don't talk about Jesus, you know. Like, whereas here, it's like there's a lot of cultural Christianity where everybody goes to church. They may not all be, you know, in the same Christian mindset, but at least a lot more church-going people. Whereas at least where I was in New England, it wasn't so much that way. So one thing I would always do is I'd always buy evangelical Christmas cards. And we had about 40 or 50 people in our department, people who were from Texas, Boston, and I'm no kidding. And by the way, I give God all the glory, but I would make sure I didn't write the same note in everyone. I wrote everybody a personalized note. It had a Bible verse on it, the true meaning of Christmas. Lick the envelope, put them in inner office mail, and put them in everyone's desk. And I did this for years. Well, after 2 years into it, I eventually had a boss who was Jewish at the time. And she was a super smart gal. And a lot of us respected her. But she came over after I dropped the card off in her desk. And where I was in Boston, we had a team of about maybe 8, 10, 12 people.
Okay.
and they're all sitting around and we're working. And she comes in and says, "You've got some nerve." And at first I thought she was joking. She goes, takes the card, throws it at me. And everybody's watching because they all got their cards. And for those who were religious or at least spiritual, they said, "Hey, thanks for the card." Those who didn't really care still said it anyway because it's a nice gesture.
Yeah.
And they knew where I stood. I made very clear because once you know they know you're a Christian, then they're watching you,
right,
as you know. Before they know, you're hoping that your actions speak to maybe there's something different about this guy or girl. But then once you lay it out there, once you finally let the cat out of the bag, right, you're out of the closet, so to speak. Then there are all eyes are on you. Now they're looking for something they can find on you. So I tried very hard. I was very conscious about my witness. She throws the card at me and she goes, "You've got some nerve." She goes, "You Christians think you can shove this stuff down anyone's throat." Now I'm stunned. And by the way, my department's stunned. They're like, and they knew this about her. She did have a little bit of this kind of flair and temper. But, and I just sat there and I remember praying to him. I remember, "God, just give me something, please." And Tim, I'm not joking. He popped this in my head. It was something like this. I said, I won't tell the name, but I said, "Honestly, my love for you in Christ goes so far that I would even risk, fluttering our relationship because I care that much." Something like that. And I know people were, it's like you could hear a pin drop. And she just stood there. And she goes, "Okay, I buy that. I understand." Just like that, changed her heart. And I remember picking up the card. I said, "I really want you to have this." She goes, "I take it. I accept it." Just like that. And walked away. And I just remember being able to share in the workplace. Now, that never stopped me. In fact, I took that as encouragement. From there, I was just like, "Thank you, God." And so, from there... change. By the way, when I came to the Midwest, we used to hold Bible studies in the conference rooms at my place of employment.
Wow.
At lunchtime and invite people in. That's how receptive they were out here. Now, you couldn't do that today. Nobody allows it. But that's what we used to do. Yeah. And in fact, when 9/11 happened in 2001, my vice president and good friend, his name was Ted, he was a believer, and he actually asked me to pray in front of a quad of about 300 people. And by the way, nothing special about me. Again, God's doing all the work, but
he saw,
but we talked about Christ all the time. I used to share with him. And I'll tell you, I felt comfortable sharing with people, my peers, people below me, but sharing Christ with your boss, like, wow. Like I was all, because I remember I had a friend who said, "Have you shared with your boss yet?" And I'm like, "Please don't do this to me." "No, I haven't." He goes, "Come on, what's up?" Like, I had a friend who was on fire, evangelist, where I used to work too. And he'd share with everybody. He didn't care. He would share with everybody. And so I remember sharing with my boss. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm into it." So, but that was probably I would just say, do what God asks you to do, but just find ways, or ask God to help you be creative in finding ways to do it, because there's a way to do it, because people need to hear it. So yeah, sorry for the long-winded answer.
Definitely helps answer that question, because it's one thing to just say, well, you gotta do what's right, or gotta be strong in your faith no matter what happens. But then to hear a real life example of how challenging, especially when it's a superior, where they could threaten your livelihood and your ability to survive. I mean that though. Those things can be very precious to all of us, because we have that responsibility to take care of our lives, and then to put that to the test. Like, what do I love most? Do I love just comfort and just peace and kindness and love, or what does my love actually mean? Like, is love just nice words and smiles, or is it I love you in spite of these differences? Or I think it's interesting when in that interaction that's common to other interactions, it's not just like, oh, I can't believe that happened in that one case, because I think that's true. But how quickly people respond negatively when their worldview is challenged. And and when we have to create our own or support our own way of thinking, or our own structure of religiosity or whatever that looks like, and that's challenged, we have to then fight for that because we're the ones holding it up. But when we study the God of the Bible and we learn who he is, and that he is a real God, and that he is far beyond our understanding, but he controls and holds everything in his sovereign hand, then it takes a lot of the burden off. So, you know, someone can come to me and say, Timmy, your way of looking at life is completely false, and be like, okay, like, I don't have to get angry about it because I'm confident in what I believe. And that's, I think, the peace that passes understanding that God gives us through his Spirit, as opposed to, oh, I got to do this and I got to do that, and I got to make sure this makes sense, and I got to make sure other people know why I believe what I believe, or else, you know, I'm not going to be validated. And where it's like, well, if it's in God's hands and he upholds it, then it takes a lot of the pressure off me, and I can enjoy relationship with God as opposed to fighting every little battle, which you see happen so often, and just kind of wonder, what is your hope in? Is your hope in something greater than yourself, or is it in you and you, what you've done and what your work of salvation?
Yeah, good point.
So, so I think that's definitely interesting.
Yeah. Do you mind if I just share one other thing?
Yeah.
To your point, there could be times when maybe it is biblically prudent, maybe not to say something.
Sometimes. Yeah.
So it's like, it's just asking God for wisdom, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not perfect at that. I don't know what the right answer is all the time, but to answer your question, it was one answer. But the other thing I would say to anyone who, well, there are a couple of audiences that could be seeing this, but for those who are believers and you want to make an impact, no matter where it is, your neighborhood, your job, whatever, one of my favorite Bible verses is Philippians 2:3-4. It basically says, look not only to your own interests, but to the interests of others. Consider the interests of others greater than your own. And I think if you're a leader, wherever you are in your home, your church, your place of your employment, whatever, servant leader is a really good word. I think it's more than a word. Servant leadership is powerful and important. And I don't do the best job of it. You know, I'm reminded so many times, even in my own household, my own home, where I fail a lot in that. I truly do. And so I'm reminded of where I need to improve. But I was just going to say, if you're at least serving others, it's kind of hard to knock that, so that when you do stand up for something, you do stand up for righteousness or whatever, people at least know the character that's in you. You know, it's a little easier to do. Kind of like when you're disciplining your children. You can't necessarily look at your children and say, do as I say, not as I do, right? Because more is caught than taught.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're growing up, we know that as kids even, right?
Yeah.
So, and when your kids see at least some of the good things in you, in fact, Vicki and I were just having this conversation with a couple of our kids, and they were, it's almost like we were getting a report card. They were kind of, we were like, how did we do? And Vicki and I just kind of hang our heads, just bracing ourselves. And we're like, hey, you did all right, you know, because you showed us more. You spoke it, but you showed it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the other verse I would have to anyone, and this goes to anyone, believer or non-believer out there, one of my favorite verses in the entire Bible is Revelation 21:4. And it says, on that day, he will wipe away every tear. And it basically says, there will be no more death, no more dying, no more mourning, no more pain. For the old order of things has gone away, right? The new has come. When I was a kid, I remember always wanting hope. Right, because remember, my parents got divorced at age 14. I moved back to Boston. I get in with the first group of kids I can. We're getting into all kinds of mischief. I actually left out this part. I got arrested twice when I was a kid. And in both cases, I had family members kind of get me off. So this day, I don't have anything, you know. And I didn't rob a bank or anything like that. But just, you know, I remember, you know.
You broke the law.
I broke the law. Yeah, and, yeah. You know, first day I got my license, I was driving a car. I myself wasn't drinking, but I had open container in the car and had a friend who was intoxicated. Mm. They said, sorry, but you're not allowed to do that. So keys with me, walk home, you know? And like, I'm like very, my mom let me use the car. I remember having to call up my, how'd it go? You guys have a good time with the movies? I'm like, well, I'm at the police station, you know? So, yeah. You know, but my point was, is that I always wanted hope. And I remember as a kid thinking, God, there's gotta be something better than this. I can't imagine where I'd be without Christ today. I don't know how anyone lives without hope. And all I would offer is someday when this world is done and the last, you know, the buzzer sounds, for those of us who at least truly believe in Jesus and truly have given their lives, we have hope of living in eternity with him. And someone once said, what's the joy of being a Christian. I think it's three things. And I heard this and I believe it. I embrace it. It's knowing that if I were something were to happen to me today, if I were to die today, I know for a fact I'd be in heaven with the Lord. Number two, as long as I'm living and breathing on this earth, he's with me every step of the way. Thirdly, I'm going to get to meet him face to face. And I'm going to be on the good side of that. He'll certainly have things to say. We're all going to sit at the Bema seat. He's going to bring up the good and the bad. But at least I know there's no condemnation in Christ.
Yeah.
And so there's hope there. And Revelation 21:4 has always been a powerful verse for me because I've always longed for that. I always wondered if that was really out there. And when I came to Christ, now I know it is. Right? Because when you know, and on that day he will wipe away every tear and we'll be, you know, live with eternal bliss, basically.
Yeah.
We used to tell our kids it's just a smile that stays on your face forever. but that's what I would offer. There's true hope in Christ. I don't know what it's like to live without hope.
Yeah.
If Jesus hadn't intervened, I don't know where I'd be today.
Yeah.
Truly don't know.
Well, I think that's a great takeaway for anyone listening to this to take with them after hearing your story. And I appreciate you going through so much detail. So often people say, well, I just have a story, but it's not that impressive. But I was definitely riveted with your story, like I am with all these stories, just how God works in so many different ways. And it's never a cookie cutter interaction with God. Like, he has unique relationships with each of us unique beings and brings so many things together. And so I really appreciate you taking the time to join me and share all this, and then to detail how great God's love is through your story. So thank you for joining us.
I appreciate all you do, and I've seen your episodes, and this is an awesome ministry. So thank you too. I think God delights in you. He's doing a lot, I think, through these stories, and so I appreciate the opportunity as well. So thanks, Tim.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. When listening to Gary's story, I was reminded of 1 Corinthians 1:26 through 31, which says, "Brothers and sisters, consider your calling. Not many were wise from a human perspective, not many powerful, not many of noble birth. Instead, God has chosen what is foolish in the world to shame the wise, and God has chosen what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God has chosen what is insignificant and despised in the world, what was viewed as nothing, to bring to nothing what is viewed as something, so that no one may boast in his presence. It is from him that you are in Christ Jesus, who became wisdom from God for us, our righteousness, sanctification, and redemption. In order that, as it is written, let the one who boasts, boast in the Lord." Before knowing Christ, Gary had the perspective that if he amassed knowledge, improved himself physically, and proved himself as a man in a variety of ways, he would be respected and possess all he ever wanted. Upon coming to the realization that nothing apart from life with Jesus Christ can bring fullness of joy, Gary forsook his previous ambition that he previously could boast in, and instead, for over 3 decades, has been boasting in the Lord Jesus Christ. If you are trusting in or looking to anything other than Jesus for your satisfaction and hope, I invite you to consider what Gary shared today and turn to Christ for new life. This concludes the 21st episode of Redemption Report. If you would like to share your story of salvation, please let me know by accessing my contact information available on my website, twareproductions.com, and we'll look into getting something scheduled for you to record your story. We'll see you on the next episode.